Hello.
All right. We're live?
We're live.
All right. Welcome back. Gregory and Paul show. It's Friday. It's noon on the West Coast. And what time is for you there in Toronto?
3 p.m. 3 hours ahead.
You're a little ahead. Well, hey, on the Gregory and Paul show, if you haven't seen us before, we break down the latest in SaaS. Oh my God. SaaS, startups, AI, and whatever the internet is debating this week. We aim for smart takes. And I'll admit that like we end up with many, many dumb ones.
But and of course,
we love memes. Maybe we'll do a whole episode dedicated to memes. I would love that.
There's all kinds of stuff.
Have you seen that the new meme lord thing that takes a meme and then turns it into a live action video?
Dude. Oh, that is amazing.
Does Maybe it work? Find it. Maybe I saw some examples that were like,
oh my God, that's amazing. I've seen some of
hilarious.
Yeah. Where the jealous boyfriend or the jealous girlfriend, where it turned into a video.
They that took the amazing. One of the guy in the corner with the party hat on who's not having fun and all the other people are dancing, and they brought that one to life with like live action and they're like talking. It's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
All right. We got lots of stuff to talk about today. How should we get started? You want to start with our first topic here?
Yeah, let's do it. What's this one? What's this video of Sam Altman with Tucker? What is this about?
Oh my God. Have you seen this interview that he did?
No.
You didn't watch it?
It's an hour long.
I don't quite
enjoy either of them.
Someone sent me this DM like the minute it came out, and I was like, oh my God, you got to watch this. So Tucker does a in-depth interview with Sam Altman.
Right.
And he really asks him some challenging questions. Like there's parts of it that are uncomfortable to watch. And like, he clearly makes Sam uncomfortable, which was like kind of surprising. Like I'm watching this whole thing. I'm like, did Sam know what he's getting into? I almost was trying to wonder like what their motivations were for agreeing to do this. Cause like, Tucker goes really deep on let's call it suicide of the OpenAI employee, who other people have perhaps accused Sam Altman of like being involved. And he goes hard on that topic with Sam, to the point where Sam's like, dude, Sam was like, are you accusing me of killing or being involved? And Tucker's like, well, I'm just saying like there's a bunch of things that don't add up. Like I was like, whoa, dude, like it's a wild interview.
Holy crap. So I have a question, right? Like yes, as tech goes mainstream, do you think it is the roles of the CEO to think about these things?
think about what things?
So there was a story of ChatGPT or some teenager that was talking to ChatGPT and ended up taking their own life.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was a few months ago, including this story of how a death of Altman's former employee. Like, what is this PR? What category does this fall under? like, what is this? Like, how do you even, as a tech CEO, as a nerd, how do you even face these questions?
I feel like they're in uncharted waters. Like, it seems, I would say it's highly unusual for a CEO to be in this situation. Like, I mean, the old days, right? Like, most journalists are pretty friendly to the business press. It would all be vetted with PR and communications people.
Right.
You know, people know like Tucker is, I don't want to say rogue, but he's clearly doing some really challenging things that are like outside of what is traditionally seen as journalism.
Okay.
I admire him to some, like, I think that like he's doing like really interesting stuff. I don't agree with everything, but I totally support people going out there and like asking challenging questions and like being provocative. I don't think Sam Altman had a hand in anyone's murder. I think it's I think it's preposterous. But it's cool that like he really pushed it and like just challenged him with some things that were uncomfortable. I think that's a healthy like kind of dialogue to engage in.
Okay.
For Sam, you know, I guess like if I was in his situation, that's a hard one to like deal with. And he did the best that he could have. I mean, he could have been more coached and come off more polished and professional, but I don't know if that ultimately would have been better. Sometimes when you're too coached on it, it just seems fake and no one believes you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like, dude, ChatGPT has a world-changing technology that is at a scale that we've never seen before, right? The adoption just is insane, 1 billion users. So they're just going to face challenges, and it's going to be hard to be the CEO of OpenAI, mm-hmm. regardless of, like, who you are. Like, it's not an easy job, and like all kinds of things are going to come up that are unforeseen. There's no playbook. There's no way to like know or anticipate like how these things are going to play out. Right. So that's kind of the real answer to your question. Like, how do you navigate all this stuff?
Gotcha.
I guess at the high level, like I think in general, it seems to be that like going direct and confronting whatever the narrative is out there yourself seems to be like the new way that I think is working better than like not saying anything or just using like PR people to kind of like
stand responses. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems to be the media has become very, this is getting more complex. Media's become very hostile to like a lot of tech companies. Right. So if you want to get your story out there, I think like you have to find out what channel to do that.
So you got to get ahead of the story.
Yeah, dude, they go into every topic on this thing though. Like,
that's all. Okay, now I'm interested. Yeah. I'm gonna give you.
It's wild, right? Like they talk about the downsides and deep fakes and military. Like they cover like all of the like really important topics surrounding AI, right? These things are really, really important important issues. So I'm actually happy to see that like. That dialogue is happening,
yeah,
rather than just like go on CNBC and they're like OpenAI, like, you know, high five, you guys are worth a lot of money, and it's just like the end of it, right?
So I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
The follow-up question is this: I with the current cycle of AI, I still don't quite see like a Steve Jobs type of charismatic leader that the mass population would trust. Will put their trust in. Does that make sense? Like, for example, Sam Altman comes across as just somebody I don't trust. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know the full answer to that. Like,
so like the
Uh-oh. I can't hear you.
Am I back?
There you go. Now you're back.
I don't know.
Uh-oh, you went out again, dude. What's going on?
Sorry, I think my microphone's disconnecting.
I think that, like, the biz world has changed a lot. I think my answer is this, is that biz world's changed a lot. Internet changed everything, right? Steve Jobs was pre-internet. There's way more information now available in real time. Expectations are very different from the, like, consumers... people in general, and people can talk back. So I think it's just a very different business environment than it used to be. Like if Steve Jobs invented all this stuff today and people called him out on Twitter and stuff, like I think it'd be a really different space. Although like, I will say this, there were times where like early in the like emergence of the internet, like people did make fun of Steve Jobs and things at Apple. I remember this.
Of course.
And he handled it in a way that like, only he could handle it. So, I mean, maybe that guy just is the most unique, like, tech CEO ever.
I see.
All right, should we move on?
Let's do it.
And talk about Oracle.
Oracle, OpenAI, signs a deal. Let me pull this up right now. OpenAI signs a $300 billion cloud deal. And stock price went up, what, 30%? something crazy.
Oh my god. That? Yeah, I think it pushed Larry Ellison into the stratosphere. He's the richest person in the world now.
Yeah. Up 44%, went down a bit, up 23%. So maybe you have some insights. What happened here?
Well, Oracle, yeah. So, okay, this is interesting. I think, like, Oracle has been slowly building a cloud infrastructure that they can sell to other companies. So similar to Azure, AWS, and Google Cloud. And I think there's an obvious need in the marketplace for an alternative to those services. So, like, there's a lot of companies that perhaps don't want to work with Google or Microsoft for competitive reasons, or Amazon.
These are AI companies. AI companies,
or lots of companies, right? Like, if you're a major e-commerce player like a Walmart, like, you can't really, or it's not really in your interest to use AWS.
I see, because they could be competitive. They are competitors.
They are competitive, right? And so if you're a large player, there are competitive reasons to not want to use one of their cloud systems. And so Oracle clearly saw that, and they've been at it a long time, putting all the stuff in place to be able to provide that. And I think they've done a great job. And so they were the ones who were able to secure this deal with OpenAI, because OpenAI obviously can't use Google Cloud. They can't really use Amazon Cloud.
I see.
I guess they could use Microsoft. Like, who knows what's happening between Satya and OpenAI, but OpenAI decided to go and use
Oracle instead.
Oracle. And there's other deals that they have announced, but it's not public who the companies are. They're gonna just pay them billions and billions of dollars for cloud AI infrastructure.
Got it. So if I understood correctly, there are, like, this neutral third party or fourth party between all
it's called
the
fourth party, right? They just have, like, less competitive products that they own in the marketplace. It's more attractive to, like, really large tech companies who don't want to work with someone who is, like, conceivably a competitor.
Got it. I think that's so smart. It's like all of these tech companies are trying to be number one right now. And Oracle is basically coming out and says, I'm not going to compete directly with all these number one contenders. Let me be, like, the de facto number two.
Yeah, Oracle's, you know, I mean, dude, Larry has been around, right? He is, like,
right.
So we talked about this, like, yesterday. So, like, he's like one of the few founder CEOs still running the show, like, very similar to a Mark Zuckerberg, right? Like, right. Bill Gates is out at Microsoft for a long time. Jeff Bezos now is just doing Blue Origin. And then, you know, Google's been back and forth, but Sundar is still at least in name the CEO, and he appears to be running Google while the founders are involved, but
right.
They don't seem to be calling the shots, is, like, probably the term I would use, because Larry's had different titles, but at Oracle, Larry's
number one.
He's clearly calling the shots about what they do. Over at Oracle, he's still giving interviews and talking about the strategy, and he was really clear about, like, there's going to be a winner, and perhaps one winner in AI, and it's going to cost billions of dollars to be there. And he wants to be a contender. And I think he's doing a great job.
Oh, I see. So you do think that he is contending for the number one spot. But Oracle doesn't make their own AI models, right?
Well, they've got the Google Cloud stuff, and who knows what else they're working on. Mm-hmm. There's always these rumors, too, that they're going to make a bid for TikTok. Like, he wants to be a player. They've got this massively entrenched database business that
right.
power all kinds of, like, government agencies and three-letter agencies that they're not public about. So they've got this massive business that they sit on, and they're throwing off all of this cash. And so they're always trying to get into, like, the latest trend. And so in fact, that's one of my favorite quotes ever from Larry Ellison, is he said, technology is just like fashion. And you have to do what's in season, like black can be as a color. I think he just gets the technology space intimately in a way that
other
yeah, and he sees, like, AI is just what it's all about. and he's got the money to invest. They've got the like the team, the infrastructure. They've got what it takes to like make a play for it. And so they're going to do it. Who knows what other products they'll come out with or acquire or whatever. I mean, securing this deal from ChatGPT and OpenAI is huge for them.
I think so too. Let's see. I think we're still early in the game.
Yeah, it's cool. All right, let's move on. Did you hear about this new Apple announcement? Apparently there was an iPhone that came out or was announced or something.
Yeah, apparently. It was barely on my feed. I think they released the thinnest iPhone to date, iPhone Air. I don't know. I don't know what Apple's
doing. It was really funny, right? Like there was very little chatter about this. I saw a few people tweet like, hey, I'm ordering this really thin iPhone.
Yeah. New color, orange.
They have orange now?
They have orange, yeah. iPhone.
Yeah. I will not be getting that.
iPhone 17 Pro Orange.
The innovation knows no bounds over there.
It's well timed. I have no idea why it's well timed. Oh, because it's fall.
Is it a pumpkin spice?
A pumpkin spice iPhone.
And that's where Apple's gone.
Yeah, they're coming out with this color scheme. Like the lava lamp color scheme. I don't know, man.
It's a late cycle product. There's not a lot of excitement, enthusiasm for it. Like there was, you know, even 5 years ago,
5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years
ago. Yeah. And so I have no plans to upgrade my phone.
Absolutely no plans.
Like it's cool. I'm excited to see like what they do with Siri and they re-release the Apple Intelligence stuff and they have something like really interesting to announce when that stuff comes out. Like I would consider upgrading for that, but for like an orange phone that's like thinner, it's just not worth it for me.
It's just absolutely not worth it. A new phone, iPhone Air. I don't care. I just don't. The one thing that might be interesting is AirPods. So the AirPods came out with live translation. That could be cool.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
So AirPod. So this could be very cool.
That's cool. So I've written a lot about this. Like, I think that like translation has potential to be like one of the killer AI apps.
Like, so, yeah, live translation in your ear. Whoever figures this out will dominate the
hearing part. It's so obvious that like it's inevitable that this product will be available. And popular, and it's going to change the world. Like I don't know exactly what happens, but like do people stop learning foreign languages? It's going to be dramatic, whatever the impact is, when this stuff is pervasive.
So the next question is, everywhere that you're going to use it, for example, in the Europe, they are going to block it.
Are they?
I think they already came out with a regulation that says they've blocked it. Because
anything that would make Europe more efficient, they just are against, right?
Right.
The place where they have like tons of different languages and there's some challenges in like communicating, like they're going to block it. But the US, like where we don't have the same issues with like language barriers like they do in Europe, but we're going to have it.
Exactly. That's the irony of it all, is the continent that needs it most, Europe, doesn't have this.
Oh my God.
That's hilarious, isn't it? The irony of Europe.
Yeah, with Apple though, like I still was like hoping that they would do something more dramatic and interesting. Like given all the stuff we know about what Johnny Ives is working on, that they would have done something like to preempt that. Like they definitely seem to be going way slower. And I suppose like that was some of the stuff that came on the earnings call, I guess a couple of weeks ago, where they basically admitted they were somewhat behind in the AI space. and pretty explicit about like perhaps making some big acquisitions. And so I'm excited to see where they go. And I hope that they do, because I think it's really obvious, like integrating AI directly into the phone in a way that they don't have it today. Like the most basic level, like Siri just doesn't work very well. Like, and so if that thing worked and I could have the translation going, there's all kinds of really cool applications that are very obvious. And so
completely, yeah. I mean, they're sitting on a treasure trove of data as well, right? Both image, video, and also audio. So I think their moat's going to be somewhere there.
Yeah, I mean,
something visual, artistic, AI.
All right, should we move on?
Let's do it. Okay, so this one's I'll talk about this one.
Yeah, help me understand this one. NPM. Actually, what is NPM?
Yeah, so it's it stands for like Node Package Manager, which is a tool to help you create, publish, and also get or incorporate open source libraries into your own code. So a lot of software are built on top of open source code, right? Things that other people wrote.
So it's like it's a core like protocol or element in open source to connect to other like libraries, features, and functionality, and that is what they hacked.
Exactly. Yeah. So like this core thing that every single piece of software on the planet plugs into if it uses JavaScript or TypeScript, and this thing was under something called supply chain attack. Supply chain attack in this context means there are a few packages or software that every other single software are built on top of. So things are very basic HTTP modules, let's say Stripe modules that every single e-commerce software plugs into. Those got affected by essentially a phishing attack. A core maintainer was targeted by a phishing email pretending to be a two-factor authentication request from NPM. And they mistakenly punched in their credentials and they lost access, or the attackers gained access for about 2 hours. And those 2 hours, millions of packages and pieces of software were affected.
It was mayhem.
It was mayhem. Correct. It's a huge, it's the biggest security hack on the NPM ecosystem ever, really.
Yeah, you said like Stripe was affected. Everyone's affected, right? Like basically almost every major like tech player uses this technology if you're using open source, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Basically, the hackers got unvetted access into your ecosystem, every single company's ecosystem. So like the joke is that we're kind of the media is spinning as in this time the attackers only earned 600. So from all the reports, it seems like only a few crypto wallet were drained, and that amounted to maybe less than $1,000. So my guess is these attackers weren't even ready, or they didn't expect this to work.
Why do you think so it's interesting, like I read a lot of stories, right, about these like major hacks and stuff.
Yeah.
But why are they not more successful at stealing money?
Stealing money?
Right? Like why else would you do it? I guess like maybe the people are just malicious and they want to like
So like in this example, they're not targeting one single big player. For example, they're not targeting a bank specifically.
They just targeted the whole network. They anybody using the...
Exactly. They were so ambitious that they found the edge case, right? Essentially, they were so ambitious that most cybersecurity experts don't think about. They're like, let's hack the entire software on the planet. Right?
The motivations here are confusing. Like some of the ransom stuff I've seen, they're actually quite successful, right? But with this thing,
I don't think they had a motivation. They just like, it's one playbook in thousands of playbooks, right? They had a list of common core maintainers and they just mass emailed them and saw just essentially fished for one response, and they got it. And I don't think they were ready for this scale. They were like, okay, now what?
The best part was the guy who maintains that code apologizing. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm really sorry. He's had an excuse, right? I was really busy this week. And yeah, he maintains this piece of code that like supports everything on the planet.
Everything on the planet, basically. And
oh my God.
So the worry here now is, yes, we raised a bunch of awareness about this could potentially happening, but it's not like something that software can solve. Not really, because it's a phishing attack, as in it's human engineering.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, like, on the Sam Altman video, they talk about security and privacy and how with like deepfakes, like, is anything secure anymore, right? Like, and Tucker brings up a really interesting point that, like, you know, how are we going to maintain security in the future? Like,
Perhaps
like everything or a lot of things are going to require some type of biometrics, retinal scan. I'm in San Francisco today. I flew down from Seattle, right? And they have that now, that clear, it's at a lot of airports. Like, it's conceivable that in a very short period of time, like, you'll have to just do a retina scan to get on a plane, because IDs can all easily be faked. It'd be just hard to like authenticate and verify stuff, right? And you're looking at this thing, it was just a simple phishing email that they were just able to design it and make it look legitimate, right? They didn't put as much effort into it as one could, right?
Correct.
And like with AI tools now, you can make perfect deep fake videos, fake voices. Like, you could do all kinds of stuff. Like, it's quite surprising. Like, other people call this out too. Like, why is there not some kind of apocalypse level like scamming going on right now? Because like, I've talked to other friends about this, and I have some theories, but I'm curious, like, why you think like actually there hasn't been as much, given like the technology is available today.
I think it's so a good marketing on the law enforcement side. As in, everybody knows about wire fraud. I don't think there's a single person that's doing this doesn't understand the consequences. So, like, if you get caught, you will go to jail. Right? This is basically wire fraud 101. So, like, deep down, you have to. That basically whittles away everybody that may or may not know about the consequences of doing this. So there's a small percentage of people that will still do this. And it's like, so cybersecurity experts are fighting this. It just comes down to like human engineering. That's the weakest spot. And human engineering is kind of random, right? Like, the guy's excuse, this week has been rough. I'm usually pretty good at like spotting these things. I was tired. But to, like, essentially, it was just kind of like luck plus timing, right? So this worked.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head with like the people who are so I think you're correct. Like, the consequences. So we've done a good job at like making it very public that if you do get caught, the consequences are
severe. Correct. Yeah.
And so okay, so most people won't are like, that. Well, why would I do that? But I think that goes to the heart of like why it's not as popular as it could be, because I do think there's a certain level of like skill and talent required. And so if you have those skills and you have that talent, it's a no-brainer to be like, well, I could just go make legitimate money with a legitimate job or as a legitimate consultant.
Exactly.
As a security consultant.
As a security consultant.
Correct. Why take the risk of like doing something illegal? Exactly. If I could just go and like make funny deep fake videos and just be a marketing person rather than like using those to defraud people. I think you're dead on that. Like the consequences have been, we've made them quite severe. And so like the equation's pretty straightforward.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, why would you do that?
Right.
Like, people, I also think that explains like why they're yet generally easy to detect. So I get one of these like phishing emails or something. I've seen some that are pretty good, but mostly I could figure it out if I look closely. it's very obvious to me that like something's missing or it's not done. It doesn't look like a legitimate one. I always, because like it doesn't take AI, like this tool's been around for a long time to fake this stuff.
Exactly.
And they're generally done pretty poorly, right?
Right.
And that was, it's always because my
the people that's doing this are either somewhere else, right? Like they have more gain and they won't be caught, and they're not the top 1% that gets hired as cybersecurity experts.
Right. But if you have the skill to do it for real, you would just go do it for real and have a legitimate job.
And you have a legitimate job. Exactly. Exactly. The industry, so to like further prove this point, in crypto, the consequence of you doing this is not as clear.
Mm.
Right? Like draining somebody's wallet, unless maybe say it's like Bitcoin where it's directly attributed, there's liquidity involved and like governments actually do care. If you drain somebody's wallet of like meme coins, even though on the market it could be like $1 million, the government don't care. Or,
well, it's outside the regular, that was the whole idea, right? Well, that was the concept. It's outside like the regulatory world.
Correct.
And all that, remember all that like code is law and all that stuff.
All that code is law. Like the community is saying that, well, if you find a bug in the code, that's actually legit. Like it's yours to exploit.
Yeah, it's totally crazy. It's obviously like not a very mainstream idea.
Correct.
In my opinion.
Correct. So that there in that ecosystem, this happens all the time.
People being defrauded of their meme coins or whatever.
Or hacked and get their assets stolen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually quite funny. Like I'm not that into crypto, so I don't pay that close attention, but when I do, pay attention, I do hear about it, frequently. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, supposedly, was it the Winklevoss twins? They own all that Bitcoin.
That's right.
Yeah, I heard that what they had to do is just print out all of the codes, and they're in a physical vault somewhere. It's like the only way that they could actually secure that much Bitcoin.
Yeah, correct.
I have no idea how Sailor does it. Like my guess would be they do something similar.
Mm. Yeah, essentially you just need a offline wallet.
Yeah, that like an online wallet. There's too many vulnerabilities, and if you have that much value and that much incentive to hack it,
correct,
and the consequences are relatively like low,
correct,
yeah, they were just like, look, we're just gonna print these all out and then not have online at all.
Yeah, that's hilarious, actually. But then, like, now your risk of who's keeping that piece of paper safe, right? Like back then, before the internet, people hacked safes.
Yeah, so, but I think real world security ultimately is better.
Of course. There's a barrier.
I think it's what it proves, right? It proves that like if that's what they're really doing, I believe it.
Yeah.
It proves that it's a better option ultimately. Like if it really needs to be super secure, like having online, there's just too many unknown unknowns.
Correct.
And like in terms of like real world security, dude, you could put those things in a vault in the mountains in Switzerland or something. I mean, there are places that are like super secure and hard to get to.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All right. We've beat this one to death. Let's move on. This one's exciting. Okay.
What is this? Perplexity at you.
Yeah. I really want to talk about this Perplexity stuff. So yeah, it looks like, so I guess the context here is that Perplexity, I would go in as far to say like they were the only, let's say, major AI company with a consumer front facing chat interface to experiment with ads.
Got it.
Yeah, I would not count Google. I think that like they don't technically have ads in their like AI mode. So I would say Perplexity was the first one to really do this, which we all believe is going to be really promising in terms of like a new channel for marketers and a new monetization strategy for AI. It obviously has to be how like ChatGPT's planning to monetize. Like $20 a month is not enough. And average people are not going to pay $200 a month for ChatGPT, right? So ads have to be the way that this works. So it's quite interesting that whatever's happening over at Perplexity, they have decided to like move away from the ad strategy, which we can only speculate why. They don't really say specifically why they're going to do it. And I don't have the full answer. I have heard from other people who are working on similar technologies that the stuff works amazing. That like it's Google AdWords times 100. So like the reason Google Ads worked so well is that the context is so clear. So yeah. I like to joke with people in Av world that like Google really invented a machine that people type in what they want and then they get back ads. How could those ads like not perform well, right? You're like, I'm looking for a blue card, you get blue cards. I'm looking for a restaurant, they get the restaurant back, right? And so what I've heard is that these LLM ads are even are that, but times 10. So like people like search for something and then however they end up in the like, let's call it monetized thread, they start having a chat with like the brand about the product. And so the brand can give them all kinds of information and like either facilitate the transaction or give them extra information that the marketing team, brand, whoever, advertising company can use in the future and like data mine all that stuff. Like it's like Google Ads times 10. Mm. So at least what I've heard from other people experimenting. So it's quite surprising that Perplexity decided to go in a different direction. I don't know if it's like disagreement with like the strategy or the other speculation is like they've put their focus onto the browser. And so maybe that's why they've decided not to pursue this, because it's
so be a separate business. You mean like,
I know it's hard to say really like exactly why, like I don't have a good theory. I don't have a good theory for it.
Okay. Interesting.
What are your thoughts on AI ads?
The question I have for you is, you know how right now FTC has all these rules that you have to clearly label a sponsored message, right? You have to label. Do you think in the future that all goes away? Like if you're talking to an AI, how do you know that it's trying to sell you something because someone else instructed it to, versus what it's generating on the fly?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I don't know what the legality is anymore.
Right.
Like, you're supposed to like, so the FTC, I don't want to get too legal here. They provide guidance. It's not technically law. So like, yes, it's typical and it's, let's use the term, like it's a best practice and it's customary to like define and be clear about the ad, that mm-hmm. this is an ad. So like Google does say like, it's really tiny. It's hard to read. But just say ads by Google.
Ads by Google, yeah.
And like a lot of podcasts or YouTube videos you watch, it's got a little notification that it's a sponsored podcast or that some aspect is sponsored. So like,
and then usually there's a discrete pause, right? Like now here are some messages from our sponsors. But like with AI, that will feel super awkward if you're just having a conversation and it stops in the middle and say, you know, I'm being paid to say this, but here's are some recommendations.
Yeah, like a Black Mirror where
that's right, exactly like that.
They start talking in ads, yeah. So I haven't actually seen, so I've seen the Perplexity ads,
right?
And they're very clearly called out. It was done in a way that like, it was obvious that you're in a monetized thread. And I would assume that that's how other people would implement it. So it will be. It should be called out. So I guess like, just to be super clear about this, like I think like every legitimate publisher and brand who's doing advertising should be clear that like it's sponsored and perhaps even identify like this is the sponsored content, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just enough to say like, hey, this YouTube channel is sponsored and then like which part is sponsored, right? Like,
yeah,
I think being clear about that's really important. And so my assumption is that like Google ChatGPT, Perplexity, all those people will do that. So then, yeah, how do you incorporate that into the user experience? I think you'd have to identify that like some way in the response that there's like a sponsored one. I think ChatGPT had like an extra almost like banner or sidebar. They had a couple of different ways to do it. I spent some time looking at it, even did some consulting with some people, like where we dove in looking at the Perplexity ad product.
Yeah.
They were only working with like a small segment of like Fortune 500 brands. So it might be that like their strategy maybe for their like early go-to-market wasn't the best way to introduce this product. Right. Because like Fortune 500 companies, I'm speculating here, they might just be too conservative, and smaller companies, younger companies, might be ones that are more willing to test and adopt this. So there's a lot of reasons why this program has been canceled, but I don't think it's the end of AI or LLM based ads. The only thing I'll say on this, because I was talking to someone else this morning about this, most of the other stuff I've seen is for AI ads is display, like banner ads.
Right.
And I think that these text-based ads, like the way Google works, are the ones that are going to be a lot more successful.
Interesting. Gotcha. I pretty much agree with that take. I think like with the video stuff, TikTok, influencers, that's not going to stop. I think that's already figured out.
Yeah, it's a whole other category, right? Where sponsored influencers and stuff. And so if they use AI, I don't think it changes the ad experience at all.
No.
It's the same stuff. It's the same stuff.
Exactly. It's the same stuff. There's faceless influencers now as well.
Yeah. Are you consuming that content?
I'm not consuming that content. My wife does.
Yeah.
It works. It works the same way. She doesn't mind it. She doesn't notice it. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So I think on the LLM side, the text-based stuff, it's going to be a monster business for sure. And I think like Google's just waiting for someone else to like crack the code.
Yeah.
And then I think Google has all of the tools in place to be extremely successful with this. Mm.
I totally agree with her. What's next on the docket?
All I got is this last piece. Oh, okay. I guess it's a meme.
I think it is.
I guess it's a meme. Okay, there, I'll put my screen up.
Somebody followed you. Is that correct?
Oh. Yeah. Is it working?
Yeah.
There we go.
Nice.
So yeah, it was super funny. Like I was like, I don't know what post I was reading from Roy at Cluely, and I read like, oh, look who's following you, which I thought was hilarious. And so I don't think anyone would be surprised to know that Paul and I are huge fans of Cluely. I think their marketing is hilarious, you know. And I get asked by a lot of people at events what I think about what they're doing with Cluely. Yeah, it comes up. It may be every event I go to now, and I'm like, oh, I'm Gregory, I do Viber SaaS, and I'm a micro fractional CMO. Like, what do you think of Cluely, right? Cluely? Yeah, and so basically my take on them is that I think they have some of the best marketing I've seen in a long time with a rather mediocre product. So it'd be great if the product caught up to the hype. I don't know if it will, but I also think that like the marketing, I think they've like tapped into a really interesting perception amongst a certain segment of young people. So there's definitely a cohort of people who they worked really hard. They're very smart. They're doing really well academically, but they feel to some degree cheated or cut out from the system, right? Like when I was younger and people even older than me, you scored well on tests and you did well in school. Like you were almost guaranteed like a slot at maybe not at Harvard or Ivy League school, but at a great university, right? It wasn't like you could do everything right and then still struggle with that. And I think and I don't think anybody has done a good job at articulating this. I think that like Cluely in particular has really tapped into that. Mm. And that is the energy that's really driving what they are perhaps all about. I'm not exactly excited about Seat on Everything and the morality behind it. Like, maybe I'm old, maybe I'm conservative. Like, I'm not like a fan of that specifically.
Yeah.
So I'm be really careful about like how I articulate myself regarding this. But I think that the marketing and what they've tapped into is really, really important. And I think that like
totally.
he's done a fantastic job at using this momentum like a meme stock. Right. So like meme stocks is interesting phenomenon where for whatever reason it catches on. And there's just a lot of excitement, whether it's warranted or not, like it doesn't matter. What matters is like what the company, what the CEO, what they do with that momentum. And I thought like what AMC did, GameStop did a good job too. But I thought AMC was cool where they like embraced it. Like, you're a shareholder, you got free popcorn. They just kind of like went with it and went like, okay, this is what it's about. And this is what we're going to do. And we're going to like embrace this stuff. And, you know, maybe movies aren't so popular and we can't sell movies, but we could just sell them more stock. And so I think what Roy did over at Cooley is similar to that. Like, he fell into this like kind of meme storm and found all of this momentum and enthusiasm that he was able to just like very skillfully cultivate and ride all the way to a monster investment by A16Z. So like,
yeah,
hats off to him.
Yeah, I think they're doing everything right. They're hackers. They're marketing hackers, really. So like, I know everybody follows the CEO, but some of the people that under him that's running marketing at Cluely are super worth for people to follow as well. So like Katie, she's head of marketing. She runs the entire UGC farm, or so they call it. They get about 300 million organic views. So 100 million views a month. And she kind of like stepped you through exactly how they run UGC at Cluely. And it's something that I've never really seen. The way that they do it, they really think about how to onboard as many creators as fast as possible, commoditizing them, which is like with one click, but also give them the tool to be successful. As saying, they have like coaches, they have creator coaches to teach them and kind of guide them through the process, be on brand, etc. And they also sort them into buckets, right? Like, there are creators that's more value-based, they like to give advice. There are storytelling creators that's really good at telling stories. And there's skit-based creators that are, you know, if you're ever on Vine, they use scenarios and skits to convey some information value.
Are they all paid?
So they have a system where I think you get paid based on performance, maybe like $1 per 1,000 clicks or something. Right, they measure it like a CPM
kind of. So it's like it's kind of like an affiliate program on Rage Bait TikTok steroids.
Exactly. I think you got it right. Like it's a top down system, with coaches, with people you can onboard, offboard people. They come and go very easily, and the best goes to the top.
I know it's almost like marketing as a product. Like, I feel like that is what they're selling. Like they've turned an AI software tool into like a fashion accessory or something.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the product doesn't really matter, right? Like, there are companies out there that, you know, if you look at the product, you're like, oh, okay. But what they've got is the system behind it that sells the product.
Yeah, I agree. That's why for me, like when I looked at this and I like what they stood for and the reaction they got from people, that's when it became very apparent to me that like they'd really tapped into something. And while it's not a luxury product at all,
no,
they've been able to cultivate a very similar dynamic that like luxury products or other types like cult products. Tesla has this dynamic too, right? Where like people are just fanatical. they just buy Tesla stock. Like it's technically a meme stock. If you listen to Wall Street East Coasters, the way that they talk about Tesla, right? It defies like standard valuation models that Wall Street analysts would use to talk about a stock, right? So it's like this whole other category, and like Cooley seems to have achieved that. And they've got this very unique viral marketing strategy. And I'm always fascinated too by how organized and precise it is, right? They have very clear system in place to generate like an affiliate marketing platform.
Exactly. Yeah. That system alone is worth, let's say, $10 million of investment. I totally believe that.
Yeah, the product I agree.
Wise, I think if Cluely, the AI note taker doesn't work, these guys will just do something else.
Really? Well, that's why I saw it to be like this luxury model where like it's just a handbag or it's just a suit. Like those are just commodity items.
Correct.
But like luxury brands figured out how to transform those into elite products that like stand for something. Right.
Correct.
Same way that like Tesla stood for climate change, right? And making it different. At one point, the brand has definitely been tarnished. But there's like, it's hard to do that. And brands that do transcend that, command like a major premium in the marketplace, right? So they're able to apply that to a fairly commoditized AI tool set.
Correct. Of course, they're spinning out as like tech and AI and stuff. Here's a left field take. I want to see somebody like them doing what they're doing, but for like financial products. So, do you know who Cathie Wood is with ARK?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Just for people who don't know, she is a person who runs a bunch of investment funds that are targeted at what she calls innovation companies.
Correct.
So they generally buy public stocks into like an ETF, kind of like a mutual fund.
Correct.
And they buy like all of these very
like moonshot, let's say.
Yeah. Generally unprofitable. Like they don't meet a lot of the metrics that Wall Street analysts would want when they put them into their ETF or their mutual fund or your 401k.
Yeah.
So she buys all of the like really out there. Moonshot is an excellent term for the type of companies. Like they're aiming for like a 5% chance of something working, but if it works,
the return the entire investment doubles.
And it's probably important to mention this piece when you're talking about Cathie Wood, is like she is the one who made an early prediction that Tesla would be one of these moonshot stocks.
Correct.
Way back before it was a big thing.
Correct.
And she was correct. She sent some crazy price target on Tesla and it achieved that. I think she's still on the board of Tesla. So she's had a big win with this strategy beyond what anybody thought was possible. So I'm sorry, what did you want to say about Cathie Wood?
No, this is exactly it, right? Like if you go back like 10 years, she was this kind of like Cluely person in investment, right? She was making all of these crazy bets. Now what I want to see is somebody that has like an outsized bet in the financial market running a similar UGC platform on top of like a financial product.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that like all those crypto coins to some degree? They all have crypto, some kind of...
Crypto sort of does this, right? But like the problem with crypto is everybody is kind of a little bit tired of this. With financial products, I feel like the opportunity is still there. It's massive.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're tapping into something here. Like the Cluely model is interesting.
It could be applied to everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably too hyperbolic to say it's the future of like marketing.
Sure, it's one aspect.
It's one aspect of it, and there'll be more people who figure this out. And like what they've done in the tech space is quite unique. I don't think there's too many other technology companies that really were able to capture and productize the marketing in the way that that they did.
These people did, yeah, 100%. I totally agree.
Yeah, but I expect more will emerge. There are a few other examples from a long time ago that probably no one remembers anymore that I remember, and they show the promise of this kind of thing. There were a lot of like meme apps and things on the phone, but they just were at a really small scale. Like they never really got beyond a quite nerdy Bay Area audience, right? Where like Cluely like really reached a lot of people, and just the internet's bigger. There's a lot of reasons for that. But I think you're correct that like this type of marketing, I think, is something that you'll see more and more of. And there are going to be more brands that want to tap into something like this. Like to some degree, you could also put Duolingo in this category, right? They've kind of got this meme element to their social media marketing. And that you and I have talked a lot about this, that like the chief meme lord, chief meme officer, having a content creator as a founding member of the startup, like I see this all going in that direction because it's just so expensive now to buy advertising, and it wasn't 10 years ago. So startups like do not have the same options they used to have to do user acquisition. So you have to find some type of like organic UGC meme that you can like tap into to really get like low cost user acquisition going, right? That's just the reality of like where I think the market is. And so yeah, I think that like we'll see a lot more and particularly in the AI and SaaS space, companies adopt this.
Correct. And just like more different platforms. There's so many platforms. Like Thread is another platform that I know nothing about. But cool. What do you have going on in the next 30 days?
No. So like, correct. So we should talk about events, travel. We haven't talked about that in a while as we get ready to wrap up here. But what I wanted to say was that, or let everyone know, is my event is at capacity. Here, you want to put up it? I'll put up on screen.
This is
And
the disrupt event.
yeah, let me get the link here. Correct. It'll be during Disrupt. It always takes a minute.
Here, I have it
I got
here.
it. You got it? Okay. So during TechCrunch Disrupt, we decided to do an invite-only mixer for founders and investors. And yeah, we've basically sold out all of the tickets. Got a ton of great people coming. I expect a few slots to open up as we get closer to events. So this isn't until October 28th, so we've got a couple weeks, or I guess about 8 weeks, right? Till this happens. And I do think some people might drop out. So if you do want to go, sign up for the wait list, and we'll vet you and make sure that like you're a great fit.
For sure.
And then we will open up a few more slots.
Nice.
You'll be there, right?
I'll be there. Also, you've gotten
Yeah,
more
we should mention
sponsors.
that. Yeah, so we have Stifel Venture Banking as our marquee sponsor for the
Love
event.
it.
So yeah,
Love it.
definitely want to thank them for being so generous to help
That's
us
amazing.
put this on. Yeah, that way there's no ticket price. It's free for people to attend.
That's amazing. And then you have amazing speakers lined up, investors, startup founders. It's going to be an awesome crowd.
It's a crazy list. Yeah, I
Crazy
couldn't be
list.
happier about about how this has shaped up. So I've done a lot of events. I'm glad this one's small too. It's not like too much effort. Once you get to like a couple hundred attendees, they're a lot of effort. So
Gotcha.
this is cool.
Right.
I'm looking forward to this. It's small, it'll be intimate, it'll be fun. That way you can kind of talk to everybody and like really get a sense of what's happening.
Nice. So 28th, 6 to 9 p.m. Are you taking a, if they show up at the door, are you letting them in
Yeah,
without
I
ticket?
don't think yeah, I don't think we're gonna be able to do that. It's a small space, right? We just wanted to keep it really intimate. So if people are not on the list, I think it's gonna be really difficult to
Guess
find
don't win.
space for you. If you really want to go, Sent me a message on LinkedIn. I've had a few people that were like, I really need to go, blah, blah, blah. So,
nice.
And so if you beg and you're nice and we don't think you're going to be a harm problem to anybody or a harm to yourself. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Be polite and participate and just contribute to the wonderful atmosphere that we'd like to cultivate. I think that part's really important.
Awesome.
All right. Are we good?
Are we good?
Another show wrapped up.